Would you like greater insight into Harvard Business School? That's exactly what you're going to get during this episode of Admissions Straight Talk. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for the 124th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and exclaim to the person staring at you, and they would be staring at you, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Before we get to our special guest, I have a quick reminder. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/124, and you can leave a comment with your question. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. Also, just in terms of being afraid or hesitant to ask questions, realize that we're developing a wonderfully supportive and thoughtful community on Accepted, so share your thoughts, your concerns, and again, of course, your questions. Our guest today is Alula Eshete, current Harvard Business School student who, in his spare time, is also the product manager at Harbus. I'm going to talk to Alula about life as a Harvard Business School student, as well as about Harbus's products, which are the Harbus MBA Admissions and Interview Guide and the Harbus MBA Essay Guide. A little background about Alula. He graduated from the University of Wisconsin in Madison in 2010 with a bachelor's in industrial and systems engineering. He then worked for different divisions of Abbott's, rising to project lead logistics analyst, before departing for GE and a position in Ethiopia as a commercial analyst. Alula, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. Now, before we get to all the Harvard stuff, how did you end up taking a position in Ethiopia?
A few factors. I wanted a different experience. I knew I wanted to attend business school, but I had been working for the same company since I graduated college. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get a different perspective and a different environment and see how that would shape what my career goals would be. And so that was one of the reasons I wanted sort of a drastic change and move away from the operations engineering role to more of a business development, commercial related role. And then also I have family in Ethiopia. My father lives there, and I wanted to be able to spend some time with him. So it made Ethiopia appealing for that reason, as well as the fact that there's just a lot of growth happening in Africa, in Ethiopia, which I had seen during a recent visit when I went back to visit family and friends. And I just felt like there was so much going on that I was missing out on. And so if I thought, like, where would I gain the most or grow the most? In the year or so both between now and attending business school, would it be continuing with the same company in an established economy, or going into a place like Ethiopia, an emerging market where there's tons of growth, a lot of activity, and a lot for me to learn working in a completely different environment? So I ultimately decided to take advantage of the opportunity. So I up and left, and I didn't actually have a position lined up when I went there, but everything kind of fell into place once I did go there.
Wow. You glad you did it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I don't take it back.
Great. Great. All right. Let's go back to the more staid, commonplace issues of Harvard Business School admissions. Okay. It sounds like a fantastic adventure, though. What was the hardest part of the application process for you? Did you have doubts whether you could get into a top, not to mention arguably the top MBA program?
So I guess I'll answer your second question first. Yes, I had doubts. And I think anyone applying to Harvard Business School that says that they didn't have any doubts isn't being 100% honest, because there are a lot of great candidates that are applying to the school.
They could just be overly confident or arrogant.
You could. Okay, yeah, that's very true. That's very true. But a lot of people I spoke with, even if you are very confident going into the process, once you submitted your application during that waiting process to find out if you've had an interview, that's when all the insecurities will surface. Or even if you've gotten your interview and you just wrapped up your interview and now you have to wait until the decision date, more insecurities arise about, whether I had the right response, did I come across too arrogant, could I have done better? So there's always doubt that's going to arise throughout the process. That's to answer the question about the doubts, definitely. And with the process, in terms of difficulty, I think, there's multiple components to the application process, and I think each one introduces different, very varied levels and forms of difficulty. For example, the GMAT for me was difficult, just balancing studying and getting back into that study mode 4 years out of school and getting into this, back into this test-taking ability, going over concepts that I had once mastered was very comfortable with and having to go back over those. So the GMAT process is one that's very difficult if you're working a demanding job, a full-time job, and then if you have any other priorities, trying to squeeze that time in and make sure you put the time you need to put into that.
Right.
And I think another component of the application process that's very difficult is the essay. Some schools are a little easier than others. When thinking about Harvard, it's very open-ended. They don't give you as much direction, which makes it a lot more difficult. They don't even give you a word limit. And it's pretty much just, what else would you like us to know? We've seen everything that's in the application, which is a lot of information from transcripts, recommendations, your resume. And so now it's like, we've seen all this stuff, which does cover a lot of ground. But what else would you like us to know? And do so in however many words you'd like. So that is a process that I think a lot of people spend a lot of time going through reiterations, second-guessing themselves, scrapping ideas, resurfacing ideas. So it can get pretty difficult.
Right. Oh, I agree. We're going to circle back to the essay in a couple of minutes. Is Harvard Business School as good as it seems from the outside looking in? What do you like best about being at Harvard? I realize you've been there for about two months.
Yeah. In my opinion, yes. It surpassed my expectations.
Wonderful.
And I don't know if, you know, I can't speak for everyone in the program. I think everyone experiences the program differently and comes in with different expectations. My opinion, it met my expectations. I was very excited for the case method. And so very heavy on the case method, where some schools will do a mix of case and some instruction-based and, you know, whatever else. But coming into this case method, I had an idea of what to expect, but I didn't really understand how it was going to translate across the different courses. And how it's going to all tie in together. And you come in, and one thing I was really surprised by is how effective it is and how challenging the case method can be, especially when you're starting out, and how much thought and effort the school and program puts into tying in different concepts across the different subject, you know, courses, and how they all start out and seem to be individual and segmented, but how they begin to interweave with one another and how all the concepts tie together. And also what I thought was more of a open discussion debate in this case method, where you're with your section going back and forth with, you know, around 90 individuals from different backgrounds, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to learn from that in this open-ended way. It was surprising to see, while it is open-ended, there is an end goal and a framework that the professor comes in having in mind, and we work towards that. But we do so in somewhat of an improvised manner. And so what seems unscripted is actually very calculated and fits into this larger understanding and larger thinking, which I think is fascinating. I've been really impressed with the program and the amount of effort professors and all the administration put into.
Are you finding the... I assume you didn't have much exposure to the case method as an undergrad. Are you finding it difficult?
Yeah, I'm finding it not so much right now, but in the beginning I found it very difficult. I think that's something everyone struggles with right off the bat, for those who haven't experienced it. And you're correct, I didn't have any case experience. Coming from an engineering background, it's very much instruction-based, and it's pretty cut and dry in terms of this is the right answer, this is the wrong answer.
Right.
You're talking math, physics, and whatnot.
Problem sets.
And problem sets, yeah, you know, when you're building a bridge or you're doing calculation or studying the force, there's no gray area about it. You know, there's standards, specifications, and whatnot. So for me, it's challenging because you tend to spend a lot of time on these cases in the beginning. And this is something a lot of first-year students struggle with, but it gets better with time because you don't know how to efficiently go through the information and be able to decipher what's important, what's relevant, how am I going to structure my case, and approaching it with understanding what the problem is at hand and what question you're trying to answer, as opposed to trying to answer every possible question, because they do throw a lot of information in there. That's interesting, that's nice to know, but it's sometimes a distraction from the larger problem at hand. But that's particularly why I signed up for it, because it is sort of a backwards method from from what I'm intuitively used to as an engineer. You're given a case, you're sent home with no instruction, and maybe there's an assigned reading that goes along with it, so it's sort of like self-teaching. Figure it out, and then you meet with your discussion group before you enter the lecture, share your ideas, challenge each other's thoughts, and then sort of defend your own and get used to discussing this with other minds, the case with other minds, and then you enter the classroom, and that's where the learning begins. As you start to go back and forth with your peers, with the professor guiding the conversation, trying to really challenge us, and then that's when you ultimately learn from the professor, whereas I'm used to instruction-based, here's how it's done, now go try it on homework or a project or wherever it might be. This is the reverse order, which is a bit challenging at first.
Right. Let's turn to Harvest and its products and the work you do for Harvest. Now, you are the product manager for Harvest. I guess we should first say, what is Harvest? So if you could do that, and then what do you do as a product manager?
Yeah, so the Harvest News Corporation, it's a nonprofit, student-run news organization. And it stands independent of the school, and it's run by students, and there are some non-student staff. And it's really the outlet for the student community. It used to be just a print-based newspaper that was circulated on campus among alumni, and recently has moved to an online platform. And so it's a lot covered with just sort of personal stories or interesting startups that are going on, interesting initiatives that are happening on campus or that are being undertaken by HBS alumni, current students here in the U.S., abroad. And so it's really taking that and giving an outlet to the students. And the product side, what I do with the products is, aside from the news, it being a news outlet, and what we do with that side of the organization is we offer products to prospective students. And so my job, I started working with the Harvest this summer before I'd even started school. So I was still kind of learning and fresh to the organization. And still, I'm learning to this day. But what it was is focusing on our products that we give to students, that prospective students that would like to attend business school and specifically Harvard Business School. And so that's with the essay guide. And then we also have an admissions guide, an interview admissions guide. And so we try to think about how we can make these more useful to students. And it's a way for us to give, for one, you know, it does generate revenue for our organization. Since we are a nonprofit, it helps us sort of keep the lights on. But it is also a way for us to give back to students the way many of us have benefited from alumni and other resources as we were applying to business school. So that happens with the essay guide, which has sample essays from students that have been accepted into the school, some analysis we've put in with the essays, along with some feedback from the authors of how much time they put in, how much effort they put into the essay. So it gives people an idea of like what type of styles are used, what type of content, and to give them ideas so that when they begin writing their essay, they have an idea what other examples have been used and what has worked in the past. And so we give a full range with that. And then we also want to help people with the interview and with admissions in general. So for those who submit the essay, submit the application, who are fortunate enough to be invited to an interview, this is a whole different process. It takes things to a whole different level where it's now time for you to sit down for half an hour and be able to speak to all of your experiences and all the questions you might face. And so for someone who doesn't have contacts that are alumni, which is the case for a lot of people coming from different backgrounds or even abroad who may not have that access, this gives people access to information from people who are currently students. And then these are first years and second years right now. And that includes just walking you through day-to-day in terms of how to pace yourself, how to prepare the week leading up to the interview, days leading up to the interview, how to prepare the day of the interview, what to wear, what to do, what not to do, general advice from different students that we include in there. We have examples of interview reflections, which will need students need to hand in after their interview. So we give examples of those, and that's really new. And so we managed to get some students to submit there so people have an idea of what goes for that, as well as we have over 100 different sample questions that have been asked in recent years, along with some advice we have on how to approach these. So we really want people to give, I mean, we're not giving you an answer saying, you know, by looking at this, you're guaranteed to get in, but by reviewing this information, you have really great advantage over people who don't have this information, this insider information that's coming directly from current HBS students.
Now, you were kind enough to give me a copy of both books, and I have to say I was really impressed with both, especially the essay guide. There are 16 essays that were, you know, from applicants accepted to Harvard in 2014-15 season, not this season. They are responding to a different question than this year's applicants. But I still think that your guide would be very valuable for Harvard Business School applicants because of the authenticity of the stories told. But let me ask you before I start spouting, did you find any common thread in those essays?
I think you touched on a point right there with the authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing we wanted to show. I mean, there's the obvious common thread of a lot of people cover what it is, why it is they want to attend Harvard Business School, which I think is important to include in there at some point. But it was just the authenticity, and that's what we wanted to show applicants, because I think when it comes to the essay stage, a lot of people are afraid to use their authentic voice and really show who they are, because they think that they need to be something else in order to appeal to Harvard. And so they try to fit themselves in some sort of box,
yeah,
and try to sound a certain way, structure it a certain way, thinking that this is what Harvard Business School is looking for. So this is what I need to do. And that is a huge detriment to them, because Harvard wants unique individuals. They want people, they want to get to know you for who you are, and they want to know about the stories in between all of your accomplishments, in between those jobs, what's happening outside of those. I mean, they have your essay. I mean, they have your resume, they have your transcript, they have your letters of recommendation, but they want to get to know who you are. So it's a disservice to yourself and to the admissions board by not doing so. And so by seeing these essays and seeing the wide range of narratives and the styles, the different voices used, I think it gives students the confidence to dig a little deeper and let their voice show. And I think that's very important.
Their voice and their non-professional story. I mean, most of the essays did not focus on work. Mm-hmm. They were complimenting the work story. I actually loved last year's question, the one that you responded mm-hmm. to, which was, you know, given what we know, what would you like us to know? I'm paraphrasing, but that, in a nutshell, is what it was. And I think mm-hmm. that concept of given what we know, what would you like us to know, really has to be in the back of any MBA applicant's minds as they are responding to the questions. Yes, you better answer the question, especially when it's not as open-ended as Harvard's, but there also should be in the back of your mind, I've already told them all this stuff in my resume and my job history and academics. What else do I want them to know about me? Not
Absolutely.
what do I think they want to know, but what do I want them to know about me? So
exactly.
And that comes through very, that thought process, I think, comes through very well in the essay samples that you have in your guide. So that's I'm endorsing it, okay,
for all that's worth. I think it's very useful for, because like you did say, the prompt did change.
Yes.
But I think it's pushing it farther in that direction. So for the last 2 years, it has been that open-ended, what else would you
Right, and I actually,
know?
let's I want to just read out what this year's prompt is so that our listeners will have it fresh in their head. It's the first day of class at HBS. You are in Aldrich Hall meeting your section. This is a group of 90 classmates who will become your close companions in the first year MBA classroom. Our signature case method, participant-based learning model, ensures that you will get to know each other very well. The bonds you collectively create throughout that shared experience will be lasting. What would you tell them? How would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, it just says introduce yourself. Introduce yourself.
Yeah. What is the key difference in your mind?
Yeah, so the key difference here is, so the last prompt was, we've heard everything else about you, your resume, your transcript and whatnot, but what else would you like us to know? Us
right.
being the admissions board?
Exactly.
And now, what I think, you know, move themselves from the equation. And now
or attempted
saying,
to.
They've attempted to. I mean, we still know who's reading, right? It's not going
right.
to our classmates.
Right.
It's going to the board, right?
Right.
They want to remove themselves, because I think what was still happening, although people were introducing themselves and introducing their unique, authentic stories, they still knew they were writing to the admissions board. And even in the question, it was saying, what else would you like us to know? And so people were still putting in some professional accomplishments, some awards, some things where they're still trying to fit in stuff to, you know, sort of impress the board as a candidate. And so what I think this does is it removes the admissions board, or attempts to, and forces you to now have a conversation with your peers. And that's when you have a conversation with your peers and when you get into the section, you'll see how odd it would be if you're doing an introduction for you to start talking about all of your professional accomplishments, your degree, your major, and, you know.
Or perhaps providing an ode. I mean, if you're already in Harvard, why would you be providing an ode to the glories of the Case Method School or even Harvard Business School? You're there already.
Exactly. So that stuff's out of the door. You don't need to prove yourself now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in here. So now let's just get to know you. So I think it's moving farther in that direction of just still wanting to get to know you. And so it's changed the environment of this essay and changed the audience of this essay in a sense, so that when you're writing it, and you start to deviate from really just telling who you are as a person, that if you start to deviate and start talking about all these professional accomplishments and whatever else, you start to be like, oh, this is a bit odd. I'm introducing myself to my classroom. Let me reel back a bit. Let me just talk more about myself. So it just forces people to stay on that track.
Right, right. Now, or maybe they might want to touch on why they'd be great to work on a project or, you know, in a study group or something like that, but certainly it will definitely change. The audience is entirely different.
Yeah, I mean, people will find their way. They will find a way to put in some accomplishments, but it'll be toned down a bit, and it'll kind of be in the background more so. And
right.
I think that's what's important for this essay.
Now, this week is an auspicious week for round one HBS applicants. On October 6th and 8th, interview invitations went out, and actually today is October 8th as we're recording this. And the last interview invitations are going out on October 15th, 14th, rather, which is the day we will publish this interview. And approximately 950 lucky applicants will be invited to interview by the end of the day on October 14th. All but approximately 100 of the remainder who do not receive invitations will be, quote unquote, released, also known as rejected or dinged in the vernacular. Now, for the lucky 950 in round one, and I guess I think Harvard interviews total about 3,000, I'm not sure about that though, interviewees to come in the remainder of this application cycle, obviously you will encourage them to purchase the interview guide, but can you give us a glimpse of what you have tried to impart in the interview guide? If there's one lesson you would like a reader to walk away with, and there are, I'm sure, many more, so you're not going to be giving away the store if you to answer the question, what is it? What is your, in the interview guide, distinct from the essay guide, what are you trying to get to there?
It's really, if I had to boil it down to one word, it's access.
Okay.
And it's access to resources that you're not just going to come by. So I think when people are getting ready for this process, they reach out to someone, and it's happened already so far. I know some people who reached out to current students because they did get the invite. They're one of the lucky 950.
Right.
And so they get to sit down with them or set up a phone call and get to ask them all the questions they want. I mean, ranging from, you know, what do I wear? How soon should I show up? What are some resources for me to get some additional information to kind of set me apart from my peers? What type of questions might they ask? And so if you're lucky, you have one person you know or one person that's willing to speak with you, who's a current student. Other times it's alumni who've been through the process, but maybe 5-10 years ago.
Sure.
And so what this guy does is it gives you access to this information coming from current students. And so people who've been through the process since recent changes, those recent changes being the recent open-ended format of questions,
mm-hmm.
who have gone through the interview process recently and know what questions are being asked as of late. And we've seen some repeats over the last couple of years, so we've you know, made sure to keep those and include those in this guide so people know, and we kind of put some notes in there to say this was asked to multiple students, so it's worth, you know, don't script an answer, but give it some thought.
Sure.
and then also the most recent addition to this whole process is this interview reflection. I don't know if many people know about that, but so after you finish your interview, you have 24 hours to submit this. It's like an email. It's an
email.
To the people who interviewed, and it's email format, but you upload it to the site within the 24 hours. And D. Leopold has said, you know, just think of, frame it as if you're writing to your diary. Some say just do like bullet points, and some say, you know, don't go too in-depth, trying to make up for questions you think you answered poorly, and you get these different advice. But here what we have is we have some actual examples, because last year we had the interview reflection as a part of the process, and we have some students that were willing to share theirs. I mean, we took out their name and, you know, anonymized it, so to protect the individuals, but we have actual examples so people can kind of see, oh, this is the direction I can take it in. And the reason why it's so important is the examples that we give are examples for people who have been admitted. And that's the same with our essay guide.
Sure.
You know, we want to show these people are now students at HBS. These are examples that have worked. And then, like I discussed earlier, we have over 100 different questions that have been asked recently. And so one thing to know is that anything goes, really. They can ask you, what language would you like to learn? What is the language you'd like to learn? Or tell me a news story that you're following. Or how do you reach your news? Or what keeps your CEO up at night? So there are just so many different questions. These are just a few examples. But out of this 100, there's so many that students get asked. And obviously, you're not going to have time to be asked 100 questions during your time slot.
Right.
But you have to know that all of these are fair questions. And if you don't have a response for these, it doesn't mean the end of the world. You might be able to come up with one on the fly. But it's worth having access to these so you can adequately prepare as much as other individuals who do have access to these and are already giving these some thought before walking into their interview at HBS.
Right. For sure. For sure. What are your top tips for the interview reflections?
For me, I kept it brief, and I realized that's not completely necessary. So, you know, I'll give my advice. I kept it brief because I didn't want to make this a continuation. I think it's important first to thank the people who interviewed you for the interview and discuss what you liked about the interview, because I think initially your first thought is, shoot, I should have answered that differently. I wanted to add this. But don't jump right in that. So I guess my number one piece of advice is first just take a break. Sit back. Don't start typing this immediately. You know, kind of walk away.
Think.
Go for a walk. Take a breather. And then start just jotting down notes. It's not something you submit. But I think it should start with a thank you and highlighting the things you did enjoy and use that as an opportunity to recap the things that were discussed. And it shows that you're really present in the interview. And also shows that this wasn't something you typed beforehand. That's the big taboo. If this sounds like something that's scripted before you even had the interview, they will know. And they'll know that you were not present and that you also didn't follow the instructions. So recap things that you discussed, things that you enjoyed. And then if there are things you felt like you could have answered differently, don't be afraid to mention those. Let's say, you know, I really enjoyed discussing topic X and being able to share with you A, B, and C. But I also would have liked to share this interesting fact D in line with the other points I had shared with you. And I thought it would be interesting. And then if you discussed a TV show on there, if you discussed an author you like or a documentary you did, it's fine to share a link to something you worked on. Or if you mentioned a blog that you have, share that link in there. But keep it lighthearted. Don't turn this into another essay. Keep it as like a briefly stated thank you note, thank you email.
Right. That sounds like great advice. Let's go forward. All right. So you were obviously successful in the application process, and we talked about that Harvard has surpassed your expectations at the beginning of the call. What has surprised you about life at Harvard Business School?
How busy we are.
Okay.
That surprised me, even though people told me, you know, you're busy, it picks up relatively fast for one in the beginning, but I mean they structure it well. That brings us to my another point that surprises me is the amount of structure of schedule. Like you download your calendar at the beginning and you have your calendar for the remainder of the semester. I might even go for the whole year. I haven't looked that far ahead. But every day you know what class at what time, what case is discussed at that class. You click on it, leads you to a link to know what the readings associated with that are. Every event, speaker, student organization, everything else that is sent via email or other sources gets downloaded automatically to your calendar. So everything you need is just in this calendar. And so, like, you wake up, and if you want to know what you're doing that day, you open that calendar first. And that'll tell you, you know, where it starts out. And sometimes it gets really packed. But what I do think the school does a great job of is easing us into this process. So, like I discussed about the cases, it takes a really long time to get to each case to start out. So you're spending
How do you prepare for a case?
The way you prepare for a case is, I mean, I think everyone has a different method for how they do it. But first, you want to read the questions. They started adding questions and prompts with them to get an idea of, you know, what problem are we trying to solve? What is the problem? But it gives you some direction. But the good thing is to just start reading the first page of the case, the introduction. And in there, you'll kind of get an idea of what the problem is, who the protagonist is, what type of organization you're working with, and you'll get to meet the information there. And then the advice is you go to the last page, in that last paragraph. It's sort of a bit of a recap, and then the next steps, here are the things to consider. So that gives you a good idea to start out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the different exhibits and see which one of the exhibits, leaving marks along the way, highlighting things that you think are useful to the organization and protagonist, given the problem at hand and what the next steps are in terms of what different decisions we need to make. And then once you've done those things, you want to get into the meat of the case. And sometimes these cases are about, you know, 10 pages long, sometimes a bit shorter, sometimes a bit longer. And then you go through the meat of the case and focus, you know, highlighting, underlining, writing notes in the margins about which facts would be important to answering which questions. And that's what you just go through on one run, is front, back, exhibits, and then go through the meat of the information. And that way, at least when you go to the meat of information, you do so more efficiently because you have a better idea of what exactly you're looking for, as opposed to just reading it end to end, trying to digest every bit of information that's fed to you.
Do you ever have, like, texts outside the case that you need to read in order to better handle the case itself?
Yeah. And some of that comes with our textbooks. So whether it be finance or accounting, you get a thick textbook that goes along with it, and there'll be readings associated with the new concept that you're learning that day.
Mm-hmm.
So you teach yourself the information, and then you go hit the case and apply it in that case. For other courses, they will just upload a document related to it. There's no formal textbook for the course, but there's a document for those particular cases that gives you all the information you need. And that can range from a one-page document all the way to, you know, an 18-page document as a pre-reading to the case.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you're not bored there. You don't have too much free time on your hands.
No, not at all.
HBS has this gorgeous gym, and yet you kind of wonder, like, when do you have time to go to it?
It's actually a problem people face.
Yeah. Now, there have been rumors that HBS students need a lot of money for the social life and the extracurriculars at Harvard. There are rumors that it is elitist. Have you found it to be that way? Have you found those rumors to be true?
I have not found that to be true. Now, there are individuals that are more willing to spend a lot. So here's what I'll say. If you want to go to every single event, every single outing, and everything that, you know, every opportunity that's posted out there, it can get very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anyone wants to do everything. There's some that do. And so I don't think you run into that problem. But there is definitely a difference in spending habits and, you know, just the ability, how much people are able to spend. But what I have learned is that for those who are more fiscally conservative, there is a large community of students, a large portion of the students that are in that same train of thought. And so there are so many alternatives to things you can do, or just ways you can go about doing the same things in a more fiscally responsible way. And so I don't think it's a big hindrance. And for those who do want to do the more extravagant trips, yes, that might exclude certain individuals, but that doesn't mean that because you cannot take that, you know, that weekend trip out to Paris or whatever it is some individuals may be doing, it doesn't mean that there isn't an equally exciting trip you can't take with other individuals that isn't as expensive. And that's the benefit of having so many students in the student body, is that you're not restricted to just a few options for what you can do to get to know your classmates and to explore the area or just take a weekend trip.
Okay. Now, one of the, I mean, it's not new anymore, but certainly is one of the more recent innovations at Harvard Business School is the field experience. Can you describe this? And do you have any idea what you're going to be doing for it?
Or yeah, we actually just found out, so that's the perfect timing. We found out
great
yesterday, where we will all be going. I'll be going to Shanghai.
Wow.
Which I'm excited about. China was my first choice. So what that is we rank all the countries that we want to go. There's a huge ranking system that goes into play, and then we find out, based off our rankings, which country and city we got. And then you get paired with everyone going to that same city and country. And they give you a background information of how that works. And so essentially what happens is you're put into a smaller team of about 5 individuals. You're assigned with a particular company in that city, and you are going to be consultants for them on a problem that they're facing. Now, we have not been assigned our projects yet, so I don't know much about that yet. But we then spend the time between now and we go to that country, which would be early January is when we report to the country, interfacing with the company representative through email, through web conferences, and other ways they'll disseminate information to us. And we start working our proposals and suggestions for the organization. But once we get there, we hit the ground and we do some on-the-ground market research. We're assigned with a tour guide, a driver, all the resources we need in order to go and gather as much information as we need. And then we spend actually quite a bit of time while we're there working, making sure that we're really bringing value to the organization. And then at the end, we present our findings to the organization.
How long will you actually be in Shanghai?
Be there, it depends on the individuals, but the actual session goes from, I think, a little over a week. So it's okay. Pretty fast-paced. Yeah, it's a pretty short trip out there. Some go sooner because they have some optional activities. Some go a lot, stay a lot longer because they want to travel outside of it. But the time we spend with them, and that time that we are there, the assigned time, we're actually spending a lot of time working, is what my understanding is.
Will you have any time for sightseeing or no?
You can sightsee within the city during the week. We're not supposed to leave the city. We're mm-hmm. focused on the work, and that's why there's plenty of time built in on both ends of the actual work time for people to travel. There's plenty of time to do that, but during that time that we're working, we're expected to be on site, be in city, and we can go to restaurants and different things in the evenings, but stay in the city.
Got it.
A lot of people have trips planned through Southeast Asia and elsewhere beforehand and after.
Sounds wonderful. And what about looking a little bit further forward? What are your plans for the summer? What kind of internship would you like? What do you see yourself doing after HBS?
That's a tough question. So now, recruiting hasn't started quite yet.
It's
starting to kick up. And so things that I'm interested in at this point are consulting, but also generally I'm very interested in the healthcare industry. So I've worked in healthcare, medical devices, most all of my career. And so the healthcare space is really interesting to me. And so that's in the short term, in terms of the experience I want to get, the skills I want to build, and the industries I want to focus on. But long term, what I would like to do is I would like to go work in Ethiopia, and particularly in the healthcare space. And I'd like to further develop the healthcare space through the private sector. And, whatever way that might be, whether it is public and private sector focused growth, I'd like to go back and continue with the work I was doing when I was there and then expand off of that, because there's a lot of opportunity, meaning there's a long way we need to go in terms of owning and being independent in our healthcare industry. And I think that there's a great opportunity there, not just you know, in terms of financially, which there's tons of opportunity in Africa and Ethiopia in general financially, but in terms of the impact it'll have on the country and the people, in terms of raising living standards, and overall just aligning with my interest in healthcare that I've built up over the years.
Sounds wonderful. Alula, I think we're just about finished. I could go on asking tons more questions, but that would be an imposition on both you and our listeners. So where can listeners learn more about Harbus, the HBX experience, and Harbus's products, specifically the essay guide and the interview guide?
Yeah, so all of that is available on the Harbus website. So like I told you, we've moved to an online platform. So that's at harbus.org, and that's harbus.org.
Okay.
And on there, we have a link specifically. While we do have all of our articles on there, or select articles that we put on there, we do have an admissions help tab. And under there, under admissions help, is where you'll see our essay guide, our interview and admissions guide. And that is, I mean, I really hope people take advantage of this product. But then people are also more than welcome to reach out to me if they have questions about the process, because I definitely received a lot of help. And so LinkedIn or Facebook, whatever it may be, but the Harbus articles are all available on harbus.org, as are documents, but I'm also here for those who are interested in attending HBS.
Okay, great. Lula, thank you so much for joining me today. And we'll link to the Harbus and the HBS websites at info.exhibit.com/124 if you want. We'll also link to your LinkedIn profile. If you enjoyed Alula's insights on life as a Harvard MBA, you can learn more, much more, at Harbus, and certainly by accessing the guides that Harbus is putting out.
Thank you very much, Linda. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You're most welcome. Now, listener, if you are interested in my tips on HBS's essays, completing the Harvard Business School application, interview reflections, and preparing for MBA interviews, including Harvard's MBA interviews, please check out the related links at info.exhibit.com/124. Again, we will include links to Harbus and to the two products that Alula is responsible for, but if you're interested in what I have to say, we'll also include those links. Listener, thank you too for joining Alula Ashete and me for Admission Straight Talk's 124th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk, especially if you leave 5-star feedback. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave that review. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.exhibit.com/124 or just by sending an email to questions@exhibit.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Exhibit, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.